You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
He's unpredictable. He's relentless. He's fearless. He's smart. He's a jerk. Oh, man, what a jerk. How would you describe Kirk Minahan? Combustible. Unpredictable. Venomous. Messy. Obnoxious. Selfish. Polarizing. Pompous.
Enough about me. Let's get to the show.
It's Kirk Minahan's Enough About Me.
So I read your story on Monday or Tuesday that all guns should be gone. And
oh, yeah.
We live in the magical world and we'll all dance around. And
yep.
The gun-free world.
I was definitely talking about dancing. Yep.
And I do wonder sometimes when I read your stuff, when I talk to you, is a part of you that just says, because there's a part of me that when I do the show every day that I don't want to really talk about sports that much.
Oh, hell yeah.
Is a part of you that says, you know, why don't I just become a political columnist, or why don't I just become an op-ed guy and just do, you know, shit like that and not write about, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez? I mean, do you care as much about Eduardo Rodriguez as you do about the gun issue?
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. First of all, no, I don't want to leave sports writing to become an op-ed writer.
Yeah.
I like to sort of like you guys do on your show, dip my toes every once in a while.
Right.
Because writing the same stuff, like I covered my first Red Sox game in 96. So it's 20
that?
Years. I was at the Middlesex News. It wasn't even the Metro West Daily News yet.
Right.
It was the Middlesex
okay.
News.
Go ahead.
And I saw the White Sox pound Tom Gordon. I think that was my first game. But anyway,
yeah.
So in 20 years, you cover this stuff. And for the first, like, even 10 years, every once in a while you write a story. And it's like, oh, this is amazing. Like, the first time you write about Red Sox Yankees, like,
right.
Oh, this is the best.
Right.
The first time you write about Pedro striking out 17, this yeah. is amazing. Then the more you do it, it becomes harder and harder to find those
well, I mean,
kind
do you
of
still
stories.
Enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you,
absolutely.
You enjoy covering. You don't cover the. You don't cover the Red Sox necessarily.
I kind of do, but yeah, I mean, I'm sort
job?
Of in the middle.
I don't know what your job. What is your title here?
I think it's columnist.
Columnist.
But,
so, but you're not. But you're sort of on the beat for the Red Sox. Not really.
Yeah. I'm half on the beat with Bradford.
I think it's. I got to be honest. I've done it like 8 times in my life. Covering the Red Sox day in, day out, to me, sounds like the most boring fucking assignment ever given to a human
I actually
being,
like
ever.
It. I like
you
it.
You stand there in the clubhouse like an asshole, really.
But until depends players, on who you are.
Well, I did.
Yeah.
You just kind of stand there and you watch the players watch TV for a while.
Yeah.
Then you talk to them. Generally, they suck in terms of quotes. Then you have to go and watch a 4-hour game. Then go and do the same fucking thing again after the game.
Yeah.
And then write about a game that has the shelf life of a fart.
Yes. You might be oversimplifying it just a little bit
okay,
in terms
but,
of going in there. But, yeah,
but
I mean, there's an element to that. There's an element to that.
Yeah.
And so my long-winded way of answering your first question was to say, you know, there's not a lot
not left not
that
left.
I haven't seen right. as far as covering baseball goes, and that's why I like to dip my toes into the Tom Brady, Donald Trump stuff, to the well, gun stuff.
You get a reaction, which you like.
Yeah, the reaction
course,
is great. Get a reaction from you guys. That
job.
Helps, you
right,
know.
That's absolutely your job.
Yeah, so
you
yeah.
But you're not going to get that reaction generally, almost never, writing about the Red Sox.
No,
just
so
basic core sporty stuff.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're doing beer in the clubhouse or something
right,
like that.
Right, but that's not even that, right?
Yeah.
That's more of
so
a...
there, you know, so there's the one side that likes to get the reaction to whatever we were just talking about, the political
yeah.
stuff. On the other side, I still actually do take satisfaction in a well-written story,
yeah.
you know? So there is the personal satisfaction in that, even though the way our business has changed and the, you know, the clicktocracy, I'm going to steal that line from Chris Gasper, but it's
okay.
a good one. We
yeah.
we just, if I can mention his name here,
that's
okay.
No, there are
yeah.
no rules here.
Yeah. So, yeah, so the idea, like, we're measured by clicks now, which changes what gets
of,
read.
I like Gasper, but that's sort of a snobby, globish asshole thing to say, a little bit.
It is a little bit, but
little
it's
bit.
Also, it's reality now.
But,
reality
but
is.
It makes it sound like it's a bad thing. I'm not always sure it is either. I mean, you wrote that. Gun thing for clicks.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm serving two masters.
Well,
so this is what I'm saying. I serve two masters. I serve the click side, which I have to be aware of and cognizant
certainly.
Of. And then on the other side, there's the, well, I'm going to write this for me, like something I like. Like I wrote a feature on other guys in the bullpen talking about what it's like to play catch with Craig Kimbrell.
Right.
That is not going to get a ton of clicks.
I didn't
but
read that.
I liked it. You didn't read it.
I'm
you
sure
missed it.
Great.
It was
I
a good
remember.
Story. It was yeah. on, it might have been on a weekend, so it kind of got lost. But regardless,
is there a point
you
even,
can do both.
Is there even a point anymore if you're a writer for a website? I used to be one.
Yeah.
Where you even write a story for the weekend? Is that even
there's
worth it?
There's kind of no point. Like I wrote what I thought was a good column on Muhammad Ali.
I read that. It was a good column.
It was about people of our generation and never really quite being able to wrap our heads around all the lip service paid to how he was the greatest, because all we saw was this shuffling shell of a man. And I posted
and
it Saturday, and it died, and no one saw it. And I was kind of like, why did I even bother?
You've been doing this now for like a year and a half?
Yeah. January 1st, I started, basically.
Do you like it more or less than writing for a traditional daily newspaper?
More. Definitely more. Because I would never be writing the gun thing. I would never be writing half the things I write here. I would be pigeonholed as a Red Sox guy, which was fine. I mean, I enjoyed doing that at the Herald for years, but that's all I would be doing.
Let's play the scenario. We were at the Herald, where Hank was your last sports editor, right? Hank Carlin.
Yeah. Well, Sean Leahy came in for my last, like, 3 months.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's say you were super passionate about this story, gun story, and you said to these guys, listen, I want to write this thing.
Yep.
They would say no?
No. They probably would say yes, and then I would have burned that card for the rest of the year.
Oh, you only get one to play.
Yeah, you get like one of those. Right. You know, I think like one time they had me write a column about the World Cup because the World Cup was in swing and we didn't really have a soccer writer. So like, write a column about the World Cup. I like the World Cup, so I did that. But that's, I mean, that stuff was few and far between.
So,
because we had two columnists,
right?
You know,
yeah. And Rob lets you write whatever you want, right?
When
I was a columnist there before you for a couple of years, you're a much better writer than I am.
That's not true.
It's actually true. But Rob would it was never a conversation. I would just write it, and you know, sometimes I would say, "What do you think of this?" But it was never, "What do you think of this?" In terms of, you know, can I write it?
Yeah.
It was just he was always just write whatever you want.
Yeah. I mean, the gun thing was a good example. I was supposed to write about Kevin Love. I told Rob I was going to write about Kevin Love.
That was a lead of your story.
Yeah. And as the night's going on, I'm like, why am I writing about Kevin Love?
Right.
It's fake. Yeah, exactly. I wrote about it the next day.
Right.
But I wasn't feeling it that night. And I knew that you guys were going to be blasting that out the next morning as far as reacting to the Orlando stuff. So I was like, well, this fits. This fits what we do as a station.
Do you even contact him or do you just write it?
I just wrote it. That one I did, I think we're on the same page. There's been a couple things. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I had to run by him.
That's for me in terms of like, you know, when I wrote about Jenny Doe.
Yeah, if you're going after somebody, that's a
little
different.
If it's a media thing, which I do a lot of, you know, that I did a lot of, that was always kind of tricky. But I'll be honest, he never once said no to me, ever. Not once, ever.
Yeah.
And you said, okay, you know, write it, it's your story. As long as it's not bullshit, right?
Yeah, I think a couple times I've run ideas by him and he'll say no because it's boring, which is fair.
That's fair. That's
you know,
fine.
Like,
yeah,
he's
right.
Like, yeah, I don't think that's going to get have any legs. Like, okay, that's, you know, that's his job. So, but in terms of like, no, that you stay away from that. No, there's been none of that.
So you will specifically think, what kind of reaction will this get on talk shows the next day or on Twitter the next day before you write something?
A little bit. But I have to, I won't fake it. That's the one thing.
I will not fake it.
So I won't do that. Like the gun thing, I actually feel strongly about. The Brady Trump thing, I felt strongly about.
Right.
That's why I wrote it. I generally, and I'm not saying this to kiss ass, but I generally will have your show in mind for some. And you can tell. I mean, you can tell. Like, there are things that I've written where I'm like, okay, set the alarm because I'm going to have to get up early because I know they're going to call me.
Right.
You know, and I'm fine with that. Like, I think that's good for the website. That's good for us.
I know it's been a while since you covered Brady on a day-in, day-out basis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's different now than he was 8, 9 years ago, 10 years ago? I can't. You know, we have him on every week, and I've not been able to, other than the one time with Guerrero, I've never really been able to get past the whatever the surface is.
Yeah, I mean, I will not even pretend that I knew Tom Brady whatsoever.
Well, but you were there, and you know,
no, but I'm saying
in terms of
covering him, like David Ortiz, for instance.
Right.
David Ortiz is a much more accessible superstar. He just always has been. It's his personality.
Right.
Brady, you know, because of the position, because of the success, because of the family, because of just everything about Brady, he's always been sort of up on a mountain where if you peek through the clouds, you know, if you're Tom Curran, you might be able to get an audience. But otherwise, you're not really getting to know him. So I have no perspective at all on what he's like now because I haven't been around him. But I think from afar, it's pretty obvious with all the stuff that he's had to deal with the last 2 years, you know, from Deflategate forward, I don't see how that wouldn't change you. And I know talking to guys who have covered the team, they said it's totally different.
Way different, they
say. They say you used to be – like, when I covered the team, every once in a while I might be able to grab him for a second in
that's
his locker.
Gone now.
And it sounds
so
like Curran that's gone.
Says, yeah, he says, it's just gone.
Yeah.
The thing with Ortiz is – and I've been in the locker room enough to know, and I've seen him with Rob enough to know that he's friendly with you guys. And I do think that colors your coverage of Ortiz.
I think
or Ian or Rob or Abraham or these guys, you can tell you actually like Ortiz. You'd give him a pass times maybe we wouldn't give another guy a pass.
I don't know about that. Give me an example.
I think it's fair to at least begin to have the conversation at this age, given the numbers that he's having.
Yeah.
There has to be some natural human suspicion in the air, right?
Yeah.
But if you bring that up conversationally with a lot of these beat guys, they look at you like you're out of your fucking.
See, that's a tough. I mean, I agree with you. Like, I mean, you'd just, be a Pollyanna to say, like, oh, no, I couldn't even consider that as a possibility.
I mean, what he's doing,
but
this year
what are you supposed to do? Like, are you supposed to go antagonize him?
Well, Shaughnessy did it.
He did.
Yeah. Didn't you think that was a good column?
That was a good column.
You should. It's been three years. You should do that column now. Go up to him and have the conversation.
Yeah.
I'll let you write that. You can write that. It's not like Rob's writing it. Just a gut feeling.
Yeah.
But I think you guys, like, I think Ortiz kind of plays slap ass with you guys a little bit, and you like it.
I wouldn't frame it that way. That makes it sound too much like jock sniffing. I do have a fondness for Ortiz, but I've been hard on him in the past. I was hard on him over the steroid thing way back when at the Herald. Like, and I mean, to this day, as much as I like Ortiz, I've never really bought the whole, like,
vitamins or
whatever. But even more to the point, like, I mean, I get why he's had to say what he's had to say, because I mean, that's just self-preservation. That's what guys do. I think Brady's doing the same thing now with the whole deflate thing. So I understand that impulse, but I also think it's fair to look at the era in which we're talking about, a guy who's just been released, who needs to do whatever he can to hang on in baseball at a time when it was the Wild West. Like, I don't necessarily even fault a guy for going down that road.
It's different now, though. I mean, if he got popped again now.
Oh, totally different now. This was my thing on Manny, why I say Manny's not a Hall of Famer and Ortiz is. Because Manny got popped when, okay, it was back, you know, when I'm more willing to give people a pass. I voted for Bonds. I voted for Clemens, like all that stuff. Manny got busted again.
And then again,
you know, like once you do it again, you got your one mulligan. And if you fuck up after that, no, you're done.
What do you think of the, you know, you're a columnist. I'm going to say, how many actual columnists would you say there are in town now? Seven or eight?
Borges, Buck, Gasper,
Dan,
Shaughnessy, obviously. I mean, how?
There's not that many. What?
Somebody came up to me yesterday and they're like, oh, the morning show was like singing your praises. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they said you're one of the three or four best columnists in town. Out of like six?
But I guess my point is, so you're about my age, right?
Yeah. A little older.
Shaughnessy is older. Ron is older. Buck is older. I talk about this all the time. I'm wondering what it's going to be like in 15 years or 20 years. Like, are there going to be any assholes left?
Well, here's the thing.
The young generation seems asshole. It's not like an old man. I'm fucking 41.
I know, no.
But
same
the younger
here.
Guys seem to be. Pro team is not the right phraseology, but there seems to be
a little bit of that.
We're kind of in this together.
Yeah.
Us against the world sort of thing, and I don't think that's a good thing.
No, I think it's a terrible thing. And when I look around, I grew up reading Ryan, Shaughnessy, Borges, Will McDonough, you know, like all these people, and they were hard edge. You know, like Gammons wasn't, but he was Mr. Information, whatever.
Different.
But the columnists brought it.
Right. Although I would say Ryan was not, you know, Ryan was more... You know, not pro team.
He was just a great columnist.
He was a great columnist. But he wasn't a shit stirrer.
Not really.
Shaughnessy and Ron were shit stirrers.
Yes.
Particularly Shaughnessy.
Yeah, both of them. And they still are. And I think it's interesting that there is no one. Like, I wouldn't pretend for a second to be half as tough as those guys or a quarter as tough as those guys. Like, they will take on anyone at any time.
Well, why won't you do that?
But it's not that I won't. It's that I don't have it in me like they do.
Yeah.
I'm just, this is an honest self-assessment. I've gone after people, like, but you have to have a real, like, fortitude. You almost have to enjoy it. And I don't necessarily enjoy it. I like they do. But then I look at the writers coming up behind me.
Yes.
And I look around and I say, okay, who is going to be the guy out of this group who is going to be the guy who throws bombs? Because Shaughnessy still brings it better than anybody. I know
Absolutely.
It's like such a cliche to be like, oh, Shank, and he mails it in, and curly-haired boyfriend, and this and that. It's like, no, he brings it. He and Borges are the two columnists in this town who still can absolutely bring it, more so than anybody else. And I don't know who that next generation is going to be, but I look at the young writers, and I don't see that same kind of, like, I think now – the writers are more into the number side of things and the analytics and all of that kind of stuff. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if social media has changed it, where you get this instant feedback.
Well, the problem is now is, you know, is if you are disliked by certain groups or whatever on Twitter, you're going to get your dick kicked in all the time.
Oh,
the question is, can you take it?
Yeah.
And some of these guys, I think, don't even want to deal with it. They like writing stuff that I'm sure is fine. Not really going to get read.
Yeah.
But they circle around themselves and give themselves attaboys. That seems to me to be their life cycle. And I don't know. You know, I can't name you somebody under 30 who I feel like I have to read in the city every time they write something. And there are people that age who are writing, I'm sure. I can't think of it. Am I missing somebody?
Yeah, in terms of a hard edge opinion,
yeah,
I mean,
an opinion guy.
Like,
now, I understand opinion jobs aren't usually handed out to people in their 20s. There's a reason for
that. But you can see who's headed that way.
Yeah, so now it's going
to
be headed that
way. I think Evan Drellick at the Herald could be. He's definitely got a little bit of an edge to him. He's the guy who wrote, like, the Pablo Trainer stuff. And, you know, like, I think he, just being around him, I think he could be that kind of guy if he wanted to be. I don't know if he does.
I don't like the other guy at the Herald, the younger guy.
Jason? Oh, I like Jason.
He, to me, epitomizes what I don't like.
He's finding his way.
He's rooting for the team. I feel like he's rooting for the team.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I don't see him that way. I don't think Jason's out to rip people or anything like
that. That's his job, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's the beat guy. I don't have a problem with Jason.
Is the Herald going to be around in 5 years?
I hope so.
I know that, so but you know.
I think it will be. It's a survivor. The Herald's a survivor.
The website sucks.
Yes, it does.
People aren't buying newspapers as much anymore. I think we're the last age.
Yep.
Like, you know.
I subscribed.
Early 40s down. Once you get in the 30s, I think it's over.
Yeah.
So if the website stinks and the readers are getting older and older and retiring, they're losing readers, I'm sure, every single day, how do they survive? I think the Globe has done a better job digitally.
Well, the Herald's trying Herald Radio. They're trying.
But that's not working.
They're trying.
It is. But I'm saying, I appreciate that they're trying, but how are they going to survive?
That is a great question.
It doesn't feel essential to me right now. And they should be, what they have not allowed themselves to do is be a tabloid.
I totally agree with that.
Jerry and I were sitting there in the morning before the show starts, and something crazy happens. Somebody at the Globe fucks up, or something, you know, happens with Trump, or something happens with Hillary, and the front page is, you know, a picture of a fucking...
Yeah, that used to frustrate me when I worked there. I'll give you a good example a couple of examples. Well, here's one. So when I was working there, and Ortiz comes out, this is our fucking city, you know?
Yeah.
And I called Hank. I think that was a Saturday, right? That was a Saturday game, so it would have been the Sunday paper. I called Hank. I said, call the news desk. Tell them our front page has to be, this is our fucking city. Right. No bleep.
Oh, the fuck
The actual word on the front page. Wrap it if you have to with a warning for children.
Right.
We would have sold
a zillion copies.
10 million copies of that paper if we could have printed them. And Hank ran it dutifully. You know, he ran it up the flagpole and was like, oh, no, we can't do that. It's like, take a chance. Another example, when the Red Sox were collapsing. So we did in 2011. We did the whole... best team ever. That was our ridiculous special section, which was, you know, it did what we wanted it to do.
It was a tabloid move.
It was a tabloid move. It was fine.
Great.
So as they collapse at some point during the season, and Shaughnessy, God bless him, he would, when the team was losing, he would trot out, the Herald called this the best team ever, every day, which was fine. And then when they won, which was for the majority of the middle of the season, never got mentioned. But, I would say to Hank and Murph, Mark Murphy, the assistant editor, let's be in on the joke. Like, let's embrace this. And so as the season wore on and they were collapsing, I'm like, we need to do a front page of worst team ever. Mm-hmm. Like, let's at least own it. And so we were waiting for the right time, and they totally agreed. And so we get to the last game of the season, and we're going to make it our back page, worst team ever, because they've blown it. It's perfect.
Right.
And the news side takes it. And instead of just doing worst team ever, like, talk about bad tabloid instincts, they twisted it around with this long, subheadline on the top that said something like, so I guess it turns out, in fact, they weren't the
Jesus Christ
best team ever. Like, it's like, what are we doing?
Jesus Christ. So, that's what I mean. That's why, and I don't want the Herald to go away. We need two papers in this town. We need I want the Herald to be the New York Post.
Yeah,
that's
so
what
do
I want. That's it.
Fuck. Taking on the gun lobby, all that stuff.
Right. I mean, the Daily News and the Post have both gone in. The Daily News has gone one way, the Post has gone the other, and it's a war every single day.
Yeah. Yep.
The inside track is not the inside track anymore.
Yeah, because they got rid of half.
They got rid of Gail, right?
Exactly. So, Laura. Sorry, Laura has a bakery
now. She's doing a bakery now.
Yeah.
Instead, they have this girl, Erica something, who does like fashion tips. Yeah. I want fucking... The New York Post has 6 or 7 different gossip columns. People want to read gossip. People want to read, you know, media shit. Why is there not a media critic at the Herald?
Yeah, that's
media
a great question.
Media stuff gets read like crazy.
Sure. I mean, I know that. I wrote 2 stories about Orsilla. I wrote a story about Remy earlier this year. You write about that stuff, it gets read.
Absolutely. Who is fucking this up?
It's a great question.
Is it Shaka? Is it Leahy? Who's screwing this up? I'm worried.
Yeah, it's not Leahy. It's not the guys in sports. No. I mean, I think all that stuff happens above them.
And there's the Herald, you know, and at some point the Herald, and I talk about this station. At some point there has to be some injection of new blood, too. Somebody younger has to go in there.
I totally agree.
Somebody has to start moving the conversation again.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I look at that as a fair criticism of our place. Like,
what, right here?
Yeah. There are days where I am the youngest person we have on the air. You know, like
I'm the youngest person on the air every day here.
Yeah.
I'm 41. Think about it. John
ridiculous.
Is in his 60s. Jerry's in his 50s. These guys, Forey's probably a little older than me, a little the same. Glenn, Dale, Holly, Thornton's older than I am. But here's what I'd say. So I have this conversation all the time, right, with Kevin Graham, with other people. Mm-hmm. I'll say this and they'll say, okay, who you got?
You got the Barstool idiots, okay, you know, yeah, like, but, I mean, you if know, you want to give them
guys,
a try,
you
like,
give them a weekend.
Thornton has helped that show in the afternoon.
You can give them a weekend try, maybe, but the Barstool guys, there's...
But that's it.
I agree.
Give them a weekend try.
I would have done that, too. But,
yeah.
But we're talking about every day, day in, day
Yeah,
out.
But you have to build up to that. So I would, like, DJ and Pete Blackburn and... You know, Jared Carabas or whatever.
Those guys aren't going to be good in the radio every day. They're just not. They're not. You know why?
How do you know that? Give them a shot on the weekend.
Because they're pro team.
DJ's not pro team.
He's not a born cynic.
Oh, I think DJ's Bruins coverage is pretty pointed. I mean, he goes after Neely and what's his name all the time.
He's also too young, too, though. There's a balance. Like, you can't – he's too young to be on the radio right now, every day, day
weekend.
In, day out.
This is what I'm talking about. Put these guys – like, how did you start? Saturdays.
On the weekends.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Jerry Thornton, same thing. Like, we should be putting those guys on the weekends.
Well, the other problem now is that you had a great training ground in the Big Show. You really did. I mean, think of all the guys who got their swings on the Big Show.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Talk about Malcolm Gladwell. I mean, you know, all these guys, Lou,
yep.
Jerry – Holly,
hey, Felger
Zolak,
and Maz for that
Felger,
point. Yeah,
Maz. You know, you can name him. You can name 5 million people.
Yeah. McAdam.
You know, who did it? Dan, who did it for Jackie. They did it forever. That's where you learned how to do it.
Yeah,
I learned how to do it doing weekend shows by myself in like you know snowstorms when nobody was listening. You had no calls and you're by yourself for 4 hours. That's true. You have to learn how to do it. And the weekends is I'm not really sure what's the weekends to me. I know Craig and Larry are on. I think you're on a regular show, right?
Yeah, Saturday.
But I don't know. Like, I'll put it on at like 3 o'clock. I don't know who the fuck is going to be on.
Yeah,
and that's a little confusing to me. I agree, and they should take as many chances as they can.
Yeah, you know, I hear like Schilling wants to do a show or whatever.
Well, you know,
I mean, I don't know how committed he would be ultimately, but you know what? Like Schilling would say shit that we would talk about. He would say stuff on Saturdays that you guys would talk about Tuesday.
Now, here's the problem, and I have to deal with this all the time, is managers going to say, well, we're a little worried about putting Schilling on because he might say this, he might piss off this advertiser, or they might, this happens with me all the time. They're going to do this or that. There's fear, which I like, which I say fucking embrace it, but it's easy for me to say that.
Yeah.
You have to look at it from manager's point of view, which is...
Yeah, but then you don't. I don't know. But if you don't take chances, then what do you get?
I totally agree with you. But I think they're in this business. Management plays defense.
Yeah,
I think they say, well, let's trot this guy out. He's not going to get us in any trouble. The ratings might not be as good as they might be if we put this guy on, but we're not going to get any trouble. We've had people say that to us that you know that if our show's ratings were lower than they are, but we didn't get in as much trouble as we do, they'd be better off.
Yeah, see, I can't.
Which might
that.
Be true. And these are people who do this for a living. But you say, well, so you want us to be worse, but it'd be easier to sell because we won't be as whatever, inflammatory.
Yeah, offensive.
Do you like doing radio?
I'll always be a writer first. I mean, that's just the bottom line. You know, I'm more of a writer. I did. That's what I've done my whole career.
Yeah.
That's what I got hired here to do.
But do you enjoy it? Do you look forward to going in the weekend?
Yeah, I like doing it. Yeah. I mean, I can't say that I don't feel I'm particularly good at it.
I think you've been a lot better at it, honestly.
Yeah.
I think you sound more comfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would hope that I get somewhat better at it. I mean, I do it every weekend.
Isn't it about who you work with, too, though? I mean, you're on with Butch most of the time.
I'm on with Butch, yep.
Yeah.
And I was on with Dickerson before that. Right. I've done Giardi a little bit, Bradford, all those different guys. Yeah, it helps. I mean, Butch and I have a much better rapport now, I think, than when we started, just because we had never worked together, and it's hard. You need to learn, like, the other guy's pace and what they want to talk about and all that kind of stuff.
Is it something you could see yourself doing every day, ever down the line, or no?
No. I'll be honest, no.
No.
Management probably doesn't want to hear that, but no.
You wouldn't want to?
Every day? No. I don't know how you guys do it, honestly.
You mail it in half the time. I mean, that's just the truth. I mean, there are some days where there's, you know, like today where when you're getting, and you might be, you've written about it, but after a while, when you get so many calls in a row about a guy telling you why a certain gun is this or isn't that,
oh,
you're just
God.
Like, I don't give a fuck.
Like, this was like, you know, the PSI stuff. Like,
that's exactly right. Essentially,
like,
that's the.
You can't tell me anything I haven't already heard.
Right. And I don't, and you might be lying to me or you might be 100% right. I don't give, I truthfully don't give a fuck why you use the gun or why you don't use the gun, how many guns you have.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. So when you take, you know, 47 phone calls in a row like that, I'm done. I'm checking my phone. I'm checking Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm reading something.
I've been there.
I mean, you say, all right, I'm fucking mailing. I mean, you know, there are days where I totally and completely mail it in.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that must be true for everybody. I would think. I'm sure there are columns where you're like, all right, fuck it.
You know who doesn't mail it in is Bradford. It's absurd.
What, on the radio?
No, when in terms of the writing stuff.
What,
like,
do you mean?
Because he never, like, he doesn't settle for the obvious story, which
that's true.
I will do.
That's true. That is true. Well, one thing about Rob is, you know, he never stops.
He's going to kill himself.
Yes.
That's part of the problem.
He's been
hospitalized,
like, several times. He's in Toronto.
No, but he never, ever stops.
When I talk to him, I want to say, like, you know, he'll call me and he'll bitch about the same stuff he's been bitching about for 8 years. And I want to say to him, this is the definition of insanity. Let's move on. Like, there's always going to be a website radio issue a little bit. I think it's much better than it was before.
Yeah.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
But now I'm on the
issues.
Other side. That's the other thing. So now I'm, you know, a radio guy. But let's just don't stop banging your head against the wall. It's you fought the fight, you know, you've kind of won. You've done very well for yourself. Let's move on.
Yeah, he'll never stop fighting. That's not in his DNA.
You know, and he works like a fucking dog. I don't know what he's going to do. Like, eventually he's not going to have this job anymore. I think he'll either burn out or they'll do something else. He'll say it's time for a change, whether it's 2 years from now. Is he just going to go back and be a beat writer again? I can't imagine that.
No. He's too invested. I wouldn't actually bet on him ever withdrawing from this.
Mentally, he's going to actually collapse, I think.
That's a separate issue.
It might help. He's in better shape.
Oh, I'm not one to talk.
Well, but you're not. Yeah, but you seem kind of laid back, though.
I am laid back.
You're not a screamer?
No.
And never?
No, I mean, a couple times. There was one time where Francona got pissed about something I had written.
Yeah.
And that got heated. But, like, in general, I'm not. You know, if someone gets mad at me, and I've had plenty of guys over the year, Corey Dillon or AJ Brzezinski, whoever, like, guys get pissed at you, I don't generally raise my voice louder than it is now.
He was during the...
That was early in his one season here. I had written a pretty tough column.
I remember.
Yeah. And so I went in there the next day, and you never really know how to, like, handle those things. Like, I know Tony and Shaughnessy had told me early in my career, and it was good advice, make yourself available. Like, if they, you don't need to antagonize them, like, hey, do you see what I wrote? But you got to at least be front and center, so if they want you, they can do it. So I go in there, and I don't know if he's seen it. I can't tell. And he's just sitting there, and he's not really doing anything, and he looks up, and he sees me, and he makes no reaction. I'm like, oh, maybe he's just been ripped a lot. He hadn't seen it. So after the game, after the game was a very different story. He was pissed. Oh, you know, he just, like, pulled me out into the hallway, like, screamed and yelled a little bit, told me I didn't know what I was talking about. Believe me, I knew what I was talking about on that particular story.
Yes.
And, you know, that was the end of it. But,
yeah,
that stuff happens. Probably more than you'd think. And this was like when the Pablo thing happened in spring training.
Right.
And you guys, I think this was a fair criticism. How could you not write this? And, like, I really went back and forth on it when it happened because I've been the guy on the other side of that. I've been Chris Smith. I've been the guy getting yelled at. And I would have been pissed, like, if people, like, made me the story in that case, because I feel like professionally the players deserve the right to be able to get pissed at us without it appearing in the paper. However, Pablo slamming a bat, and with all the stuff going on around him, if Brock Holt had done that, I wouldn't have felt bad about not writing it at all.
Yeah.
But because it was Pablo, and because it was like he was a story at that point, I did feel like maybe I could have handled that differently.
It's also 2016. I think in 2016 you have to write that. Maybe in 1998 you don't write it. I just feel like the world is with Twitter now. We know what's going on. Guys are tweeting about it. So right there, so we know what's going on. So it's already out there. You're not.
Yeah. Well, we all wrote about it once it got out there.
Right
now.
When was the last time you were at Gillette? Telling me for like a monster truck show or anything.
No. I haven't been at Gillette since the last game I covered in 08.
Are you not allowed there?
I don't know if that's the case. You could ask Rob that, but I've not been sent there. So
you have no idea? Because I have heard, not from Rob, I've heard that they don't want you in the building.
Well,
anymore.
I think that's pretty safe to assume.
No, I know that.
Yeah, I mean, but them not wanting me there, and them not allowing me there are two different things. I'm certain I'm not wanted there.
Well, like you were at the Super Bowl in Phoenix.
I was at the Super Bowl,
but
yep.
But you didn't cover the Patriots.
I stayed on the Seattle side.
Was
that
a WEI decision or a Patriots NFL decision?
That was a WEI decision. Yeah. Oh, the NFL, I don't think the Patriots or the NFL could keep me from going down there to cover stuff.
You don't think the Crafts could?
I don't think so.
You don't think they would make a stink of it?
I think they would make a stink. Right. I'm saying I don't think they have the authority to say this isn't like Trump saying no,
right,
Washington Post.
Right.
But yeah, they don't want me there. I don't necessarily blame them. And
well, how do you feel about it with
eight and a half years later?
What is anything you feel any different now than you did whatever 2 weeks after it happened?
Well, 2 weeks after it happened was
you know,
yeah. No, I mean, here's the thing with that. So 8 years later, there have been some misconceptions about that.
Okay.
Like the two things that bothered me, like I will have to wear that for the rest of my life. I got that Scarlet letter, and I'm like, I made that bed. That's mine and mine alone.
Do you feel like you fucked up, or
I fucked up.
Do you feel like you had 95% of the story right?
Not that much.
No.
I mean, there was a time where I definitely clung to that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, someday the truth will come out. But as the years have passed, I've been like, you know what? You just got to own up to it.
When
like,
did you know during the process that you had fucked up?
That's tough to say. I mean, probably, I don't know. I mean, first of all, you're worried about things when anytime you write anything like that.
Well, sure. Did you feel when you had it that you had it that you were?
Oh yeah. Oh, I had no doubt. No, believe me. If it were one where I was like,
you would have backed off.
Yeah, I definitely would have backed off.
Right.
You know. So after it came out, you know, there's a lot like, oh, he made this up to make a name for himself. It's like, what kind of name would I be making for myself? I am not in that business whatsoever.
Sure.
So that, and then the whole thing like, oh, he has no integrity. It's like, well, listen, I fucked up and I got to live with that for the rest of my life. And believe me, there is not a single day that has gone by in 8.5 years where I have not thought about that and like, how did I get here? How did I allow this to happen?
Well, how did you allow it to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I wrote in the front page thing for the Herald after it happened, I allowed the fact that I was afraid I was going to get beaten on the story. I allowed that to override you're positive, but let's leave nothing to chance kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. because this is something that I had heard about months earlier and had worked on, you know, for months. And even though I felt I had it, it's like there can be no doubt, you know, and it's like in retrospect, if without seeing it, like I should have been on a story of that magnitude. It was like, if I don't see it, if you can't see it, you can't write it.
Was there anybody in the process who said, no, this doesn't feel right? Or was everybody involved said, no, this is good. Go with it.
No, they were definitely along the way. It was like, well, you need more, you know?
Right.
And so, but that's, you know, that's all on me. And, you know, and since it's happened, so you ask me, how does it feel differently? I mean, the only thing that feels different is it's sort of like a dull ache now, as opposed to that, like, brain frying, oh, my God, what have I done?
Did you think you were going to get fired?
I certainly, I thought it was a possibility.
No? I don't remember.
No. I mean, I took some time off, like, when the dust finally settled, but I don't think I was never officially suspended, but I mean, how could you not worry? It's like,
sure, no,
you know, that's not a small fuck up, you know?
Right. And so now, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know this, but I just give, like, if I'll tweet something that you write out, you know, if I'll retweet something you tweet out, or if I tweet out a column that you write, or respond to you, you know, it'll be if I get 20 responses from it on Twitter.
Yeah.
15 of them are, you know, fucking fuck him.
Oh,
he hates the Patriots. I don't trust this fucking guy. How do
you
get a job?
I mean,
I know, but
yeah.
How do you, you know, intellectualize that?
I mean, you know how it is.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You get ripped every day for this time. Or that. You just eventually you sort of put up a wall, and it's like, yeah, it's just words. And the thing, too, is. Most of the time, it's the exact same thing. Like,
right.
it'll be 200 different people, but they're writing the exact same thing.
Right.
So it's like, whatever. There was one interaction I had on Twitter where somebody, like, complimented something I had written. It was clearly a younger tweeter, like maybe a teenager. Complimented something I had written probably about Brady, like, during the whole Deflategate thing. It must have been a more pro-Brady slanted column. Oh, great job on this. Somebody else responds to that response and is like, but this is the asshole who wrote about the walkthrough, blah, blah, blah. And then that person, and now so I'm like at Jay Tomasit on this whole conversation. So then that person's like, what are you talking about? So the other guy's like, so exactly by the end of the tweet,
he hated you.
The guy, he was like, fuck you, like at the end of it. So
was it part of you that said, you know what, maybe I'll just get out of Boston?
No.
Not,
this
never,
is my home.
Right.
I'm not doing that. I'm not running. You
but
know,
there's no part of you that said, you know, maybe I'll just go fucking sell insurance or go be a teacher.
Nope.
Knew we had to get through the fire.
I had to get through the fire. I mean, I'm glad social media didn't exist because I would have been
fired. That's the other thing I was going to say. Yeah. You would have. I'm not saying it would have been fair.
I would have been fired. I would have been fired in a week because this is what has always bothered me about social media. It's fake outrage. And every time I read a story about anything.
It's also temporary outrage.
Exactly. Anytime I read a story that says reaction on social media was swift, and you see it in the New York Times, you see it in the Washington Post, I'm like, that is meaningless.
Right.
That is like keyboard bravery. There is nothing. That is ephemeral. Like, there is nothing to that whatsoever.
But what would have happened was he would have written that, and, you know, the pro-Patriots crowd would have fucking galvanized. And and your bosses, as good the people as I'm sure they are, would have had to fire you.
Yep.
They would have had no choice.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, I've thought about that. I mean, I got lucky. I got lucky in that sense.
Do you think of it now, like, when you have a story and you're about to break a story or you have something, do you still think of it every single time you're about to?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, I wrote the beer in the clubhouse thing. Like, I broke that story for the Herald.
Right.
And you better believe I was leaving. Well, no, because that one I had no worries about that. But I left nothing to chance on that story.
But you can't be wrong again, right?
Nope. I can't be wrong at all. And, you know, sometimes it's annoying because you'll be tempted. Like, the Schilling thing was a good example. Like, I wrote that column about Schilling, and I made a bad choice of words. I said something like, you know, Schilling has tweeted, about
us.
I don't know if it was before or after he came. No. When I came on with you
guys.
That's what I mean. I had said something like sexual orientation.
Right.
And, like, Schilling has been outspoken that he doesn't care about your sexual orientation.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't care about that. So I was conflating the transsexual thing with orientation. So bad choice of words. So the temptation, believe me, was there to just go into that column and just change it, and no one would be the wiser.
Because online, you can do that.
Because I can do that online, but I was like, you know what? I can't do that. So I had to put asterisk, correction. The original version of this story said this. And of course, like people online, there goes Tomasi again fucking up. It's like, well, there's no journalist alive that's going to not make mistakes here and there. And so do you want me to own them? Or do you want me to go online and erase them and pretend they didn't happen?
But unfortunately for you, you just have to eat it, right?
I mean, I have to eat it.
You
got to
eat shit on it. I mean, that's.
Yep.
I guess that's just the way it's always going to be.
Yeah.
Did you think that?
I should make clear, like, so in most jobs, I feel like you should not be judged on your worst day.
I agree.
In my job, you kind of have to be. So I, you know, as much as I would like to say, geez, you know, I've had a good career. I've written a lot of good stories.
Absolutely.
I understand and I accept. I don't love it, but I accept, like, this is what defines me.
Yeah.
You know, fair or not,
well, you know,
that's reality.
I could do this for 30 years and have a great career, and I'm doing pretty well right now.
And
they're going to say he's the guy who called Aaron Andrews a bitch.
No.
There's no doubt. That's going to be one of the first, or said that Roger Goodell should
be killed. No one's going to remember that. They might remember that.
Absolutely. These things are always going to stick.
Yeah.
They're always going to stick, and you say, like you said, I've said to them, like, I fucked up. You know, you fuck up and you move. There's nothing you can do to correct the past.
And when I was covering the Pats, so early in that year, that 07 season, Spygate happens. And I did a story early in the thing because everyone was ripping Belichick. How was he handling it? This and that. And so I talked to a an image consultant, a crisis management person
right.
in New York.
Right.
And so they, I wrote a story. This is how a crisis management person would have Belichick deal with this, blah, blah, blah. So then my thing happens months later, and I write that mea culpa as best I could. And that crisis manager guy reached back out to me, and he said, "That was good. Now never talk about it again."
Right.
Like, this is how, this is how these things work.
You talk about it a lot, right?
No.
Do you say, you're on the radio, people must call and say it, no?
Once or twice. Right. It's not been that much. There was one guy when I was on with Dickerson who went at me for like 7 minutes.
Right.
But
that's okay once in a while.
Yeah.
People, because it's out there.
Yeah. No. And I bring it up from time
to
time.
When you first got hired, I talked to Rob about it, and I was pushing for it. I said, fucking absolutely, bring him in. But Rob was always like, "Yeah, you can't. Don't talk. If you're on with John and Jerry, try not to bring it up."
I said to Rob, "I'm like, you can't say that. Just bring it up." Like,
good, but I'm like, it exists. If you don't talk about it, it's worse than
no. Because that makes us look fraudulent too. Because we're the ones who will go after anyone for anything.
Right.
So I did not want, and I've brought it up on the air from time to time. Like Giardi and I were on last week talking about something. He was asking, "What are your interactions like with people versus social media?"
Right.
And I was like, listen, I've given people a reason to be legitimately pissed at me.
Right.
And I've never once had a Patriots fan say anything. I had people say shit to me about something I wrote about Manny like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
But I have never once in person had anyone say, "How could you do that?" Now, social media is very
different.
Way different.
But yeah. And so you cover the Patriots the next season?
Yep. Whole season.
Brutal?
Weirdly enough, no. I thought it would be. So a couple things about that. So one, I was neutered. Like I felt like,
right.
I mean, I would look at my own byline, and I probably shouldn't admit this, but I would look at my own byline and say that you have no credibility to be ripping the Patriots.
Right.
Like I used to be pretty pointed in my coverage of the Patriots. I mean, they were good when I covered them. Like they were legitimately good.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of stuff to criticize, but I would be critical here and there. That 08 season, like, it was down the middle. I might as well have been the beat guy again because I wasn't going to.
So you just wrote scared all year?
I wrote scared all year, which,
right.
What are you supposed to do? Like, so the other thing was I go in there the first day that I'm covering them. It was like a mini camp maybe after it's all finally shaken out and, whatever. I was going to say Orrin Hatch, whoever the senator was from Pennsylvania who was.
Specter.
Arlen Specter had his say. The whole thing was finally done. So I go in. I have no idea how I'm going to be received, obviously. And so a little trepidatious, but I'm like, all right, got to do it. Like, got to show my face.
Talk at the Herald of just saying, let's move this guy?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why in retrospect.
Very strange.
Yeah, I know. So I went back down there and I covered mini camp and I still have no idea. And so the practice ends, and out of the respect to the player, I won't name him, but one of their most well-known players, respected player, as he's leaving the practice field, makes like a 260-degree turn, runs by me and gives me like the whack on the ass as he runs by, like sort of like hang in there kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I think maybe I'm okay. Like, if that guy is doing that in front of the entire media and in front of all of his teammates, I must be okay. And I have to say, I gained so much respect for Belichick that year because he cannot think highly of me at all.
Right.
Like, and I don't blame him for that. He did not, like, he could have made my life hell.
Sure.
He could have, like, no players talked to me, no coaches talked to me. He could have shut me down every time I asked a question in a press conference. I don't know why, but he treated me completely professionally the entire year, never had an issue at all, never had an issue with a single player in there.
Did you have any interaction with the Crafts ever?
Oh God, not in years. Like,
no.
Yeah, I mean, Ben? I think it's fair to say if I were to die on the way out of the studio, I don't think there would be any tears shed in Brookline. But, again, like if I were in their shoes, like I don't know if I would feel that differently.
So you left after that year, you left the beat.
I covered, my last story for the Herald.
So your last game was that Buffalo game?
Was that
the right
last
year?
It was the Castle year.
Yeah, didn't they win the last game in Buffalo? Castle like punted, or am I making that game up?
I don't remember.
Yeah,
which
but they
game
went 11-5.
Maybe that was Buffalo. I mean, yeah, so anyway, they went 11-5, they missed the playoffs. I went to spring training. So I went right from there to the ALCS. Like, I started covering that because it was 08.
Right.
Wait, that's the fall. How did that work?
That would make sense because it was December or January.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So spring training. So I did go to the ALCS. Right. I did sort of both. Yeah. But the fall, the spring training, I went down and Vince Wilfork had a charity like softball tournament.
Yeah.
And so I went down there and I got Wilfork on his contract, which at the time was like a big deal.
Right, right.
And I got the only interview Randy Moss did the entire offseason. And that was a big deal too because
sure.
people were wondering like what did his future hold and this and that.
Right.
So I felt good about it. Like at least I left the Patriots beat having done good work. Like, listen, I'm never gonna change what happened.
Right.
There's no changing that. But at least I could say that I left that beat, you know, doing good work.
Could you go, if Rob said, listen, I want you to do games this year at Gillette, would you go do it?
Yeah, I'd go wherever he sent me.
No,
absolutely.
I know, but would you say to him, like, no? I mean, not no,
no,
but would you
no,
say?
No, I would go. I mean, go? Yeah, I'd go. Yeah.
And you'd be all right with it, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like having Sundays to watch them at home on TV. But
well, so that's the other thing. It's like you're really missing out on it. I mean, you can almost write a column as well from home is from there. I feel the player access is nothing.
Yeah, it's still it's different to be there. It's definitely different to be there. You get a different feel for things, and even just being in the locker room afterwards, it's different to hear the quotes and look the guy in the eye as he says them, as opposed to reading like the long transcript.
Don't you think most player quotes suck though?
They do suck, I mean, but I'm just saying, like, know, being down there does make a difference.
How many players, when you talk to the Red Sox, how many would you say are, like, actually, you know, thoughtful, enlightened, interesting quotes on that team?
Right now, I would say Ortiz can be quite a bit. I think Price can be.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go through the roster. I mean, yeah. Right. No, but I mean, the thing with that is being there and having relationships with people allows you to write stuff even if the quotes suck, you know? So
right. We'll circle back to the start. There's no part of you that gets up and is like, are you working tonight?
Yeah, I'll be at Fenway.
Is there any part of you that's dreading putting in like 9 hours on this regular season game on June 15th? Like, you know, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far because that's kind of nihilistic. But
well, that's the way I think.
Yeah,
that's my attitude generally.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's certainly a part like, okay, we're in it's a grind for us too.
Right.
I don't travel like I used to. At the Herald, I traveled 100 nights a year.
Ugh.
Rob does the majority of the travel now,
right.
So I'm picking my spots. I don't mind. I like doing some.
Some.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't. I don't need to do what I did in the past.
Like 30 games a year.
30 would be good.
That's about right.
Yeah. But I don't think I even do that now.
No.
Once you take, I mean, spring training, I do three or four weeks of that. But if you do actual games, like so far road games this year, I think I've done a series in New York. I've done a series in Kansas City. I'm forgetting one. I'm going to Seattle next month. But yeah, there's not. It's not like it was.
The thing I like about the beat writers and all the sports, and I don't spend much time with them. I spent a week with them down in spring training, and I'll check in every once in a while with them. Is that they're as fucking petty and gossipy as we are during a commercial break on the station?
Oh yeah, you know? Worse.
And they seem
just
like
as bad.
It seems like there's cliques too, and there's a couple of guys everybody hates. There seems to be that thing.
I talk about like sometimes I feel like we can be a bunch of Heathers.
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah.
But there's somebody on the outside, right? There's somebody. There doesn't seem to be that cynicism when I read you guys though.
Yeah.
You're a columnist, different.
Yeah.
But the beat writers can be like Rob can be a cynical, angry fucking asshole. And I mean that in a great way. I wouldn't be friends with him if he wasn't.
Yeah.
But he goes on the radio and he writes, and he's not that guy. Ian Brown is a snarky fucking guy.
Yeah.
I'm going to read that. Why not?
Well, I mean, I don't know what you want me to say to that. I don't know.
Where is that cynicism?
I think it's like any workplace environment, though. There are people who will bitch about.
Obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it on. It's your job to do it on the air, to bring it on
the
air.
Although I would say there's people in this business who are the same way.
Yeah.
They're assholes, and then they go in there and they pretend it's sunshine and people pissing champagne.
Yeah,
I just wonder sometimes. I find that the beat writers of the Red Sox, going to spring training, I'll pop my head in when you guys are working there, and it's a miserable bunch of fucks. But I mean that in a good way. Like I want to.
Well, you know what? I mean, here's to answer your question seriously. So part of it is, if you are going to be the guy who's angry and cynical in your writing towards the team that you're covering, it makes it harder to cover the team. Like. So a lot of guys will shy away from that kind of confrontation for that reason.
Think they're afraid of it?
Yeah.
Just fear.
Yeah, or it's just like it's sort of but you know what it goes back to like what you were saying about the social media, like the circle. If you have 15 people who are telling you how great you are,
right.
you want them to keep the horde at bay, who will tell you that you suck. And so it becomes easy when you have this instant feedback. I think any writer who claims that they pay no attention to it is lying.
It's like any host.
So it's sometimes it is hard, and there are times where even like, you know, the gun thing, not that I really gave a shit, but there was a part of me that was like, oh, I'm going to get crap from like NRA people.
Right.
You know, and that thought enters your mind. And so when you're covering a team, especially if you're younger, you might take a path of less resistance. So you're not like, why ruffle feathers when you can just get along?
Isn't the most important thing to be read, though?
Yeah, I think
Isn't that number one?
Yeah.
Isn't that the number one rule?
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of guys are violating that. They'd rather write something that gets pats in the back.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
You know, when is that? We're getting back to the beginning, but I feel like that's 10 or 15 years from now. I think we're fucked. I mean, I just unless they get older and more cynical and say, fuck it, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say there's the Barstool and the Deadspin sort of class as well.
That's
true, so maybe that's where you get that stuff.
I guess.
You know?
Yeah. All right, I'll let you go. You gave me enough of your time and now you want to get out of here. So we've learned that you don't want to do the radio every day. You don't like the radio.
I don't want to do it every day.
Do you like doing TV when you go on Comcast? It's so easy.
Yeah,
it's fucking stealing money. I mean, is that not stealing
money? Yeah, when are you going back?
Never. They don't want me back. Think about it from Comcast's perspective, right? So they put me on, and I think the show's a little better when I'm on with, like, say, Gary. We have more fun together. You know, it's a better chemistry. But they look at it and say, okay, we bring this dickhead on once a week or twice a week. The show's, you know, 12% better.
Yeah.
The ratings aren't any different. Nobody knows when they're on, so it makes no difference that way. There's no advertiser difference. And there's always a chance that he's either going to say something or somebody's going to try and fuck him over, and we're going to be in this mushroom cloud again.
Yeah.
So I think for them, they say, is it really worth the risk for minimal reward? Like, radio is different. Like, I come on, there's a tangible ratings difference. I bring in X amount of dollars. If I leave the show, it suffers. So I get that. I get why they have to keep me around the radio. But TV, they say, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, you've been on that show. It's just these shows, they don't.
Yeah, I was on last night.
Yeah, they just roll you in and you do your 7 minutes and you just, you know, you make a little noise and then you get the fuck out of there, right? Like, it's the easiest gig of all time. How easy is TV?
I treat it with the utmost respect and professionalism.
But you know, okay, like, what time do you, what, you were on the 10 o'clock last
Well, night? No, 6 o'clock. So last night they had me come in and do like a 2-minute thing at the top of the 6 o'clock show, and then stick around to do 6:30. No,
that's not so bad.
So I went on at 6, but it's not so bad. But there's a part of me that was like, oh, I got to do two different shows at once.
Are they paying you for both of them?
That is a good question.
Oh, you don't do that. Don't fall into that trap.
Yeah.
But okay. So, but that's different last night. But if you know you're doing a fucking B block.
Yeah.
It's 6:30. You know you can get there at
6:37.
6:32.
Yeah.
And you'll be back in your car at 6:51.
Yeah.
And there's nobody. You can go on.
And I live 14 minutes away.
Right.
So.
I live in Lexington. I live 6 minutes away. You could go on and be, you know, whatever. You can Sporty McKenzie it up for 6 minutes and pretend to be outraged about something. Get in your car. Boom, you're done. It's like it never happened. Nobody tweets you about it, right? Nobody ever tweets you about being on TV.
Not very rarely.
Very rarely.
Yeah. Only if Comcast like tweets something with something inflammatory or whatever.
I always think one of these days Comcast is going to wake up and say, you know, why are we paying these people to do this? We can just pay somebody half as much or a quarter as much.
That's enough of that.
That is going to happen. Well, if I'm not going to be on, I don't want anybody to get paid. I don't want anybody to get paid.
I didn't think that gravy train would still be rolling, and here we are like 15 years later.
Well, you know what it comes down to ultimately, and the few times I've talked to Comcast people recently, you know, the 6 o'clock show is a straight news show, and I feel like that show is antiquated. It's just over. Nobody puts on TV at 6:26 to see local television sports news anymore. The 6:30 show and the 10 o'clock show, people still like to flip around and see faces they know, people they know, argue about shit. They just do. It's the Skip Bayless syndrome. People like opinion. The other stuff is boring.
Yeah. And
so if you have an opinion like you have some thoughts and you can put together 4 or 5 sentences in a row, there's always going to be a spot for that.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I agree. But also, like, whatever they pay us, it's still a drop in the bucket for NBC, you know?
Billions and billions of dollars. But I do wonder if there's going to be a bean counter in there one day. Who's going to do that? I mean, like, you know, at some point, newspapers realize, okay, we don't need to send two people to Winnipeg on a Saturday night. We don't need to send people to the Celtics Timberwolves game in January. There's no money for it.
Yeah, hasn't happened yet, but
well, it has a little bit.
That's some of the smaller papers.
But
yeah,
even the Globe, but even the Globe will not, like, the Globe this week. I don't think Michael Whitmer's gone now. I think, right?
Yeah,
but they're not going to. Sometimes they're not going to send somebody to cover the British Open. You know, they're not going to cover. They used to cover three people for a fucking Hagler fight.
Yeah,
you know, he was local. That I think they've started to figure that out, which sucks for you and sucks for me who likes it, but it also makes business sense, right?
Yeah.
You know, is the Herald doing that? Does the Herald send?
I don't know. The Herald, Borges does a lot of their golf stuff, so I don't know if he. I don't remember if he's typically gone
like
to the British.
He I don't like Borges when he's not writing football. I'll be honest.
I mean, football is clearly his
like when
wheelhouse.
But baseball, when he goes down, I know he probably gets a week to spend down in Florida. It's probably part of his, you know.
He did good stuff down there this year.
But it doesn't feel.
I mean, he's got that perception. Oh, you're a football guy.
Right.
So there's like the natural thing where you. If you don't read them all the time, then you might say, oh, this isn't football. But I think he brings it on everything.
How much longer do you think?
I'm a big Borges guy.
I know you love Borges. Yeah. Is he like your – was he your kind of your guy? Is
he was my guy growing up, yeah. I mean, I read –
when you started working there, he was
– when I started covering the Pats, I went to – for the Herald. I'd only been on the beat a few months. I went to the owners' meetings. I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
I think I – yeah, I knew nobody.
Right.
And Borges, we were the two guys there. I'm like, oh, my God, I got to compete against this guy.
Right.
He pulls me over and talks to me for like 2 hours. Gives me the lay of the land, tells me who everybody is, like, because he's not threatened by me. Who am I? He's Ron Borges.
Yeah, but he
like,
could still be an asshole.
He could have been an asshole, but he wasn't. So,
but don't you find that the guys who everyone think, like, I've had problems with Shaughnessy, but like, he's not an asshole.
No, no. Like, Shaughnessy's good people. Like, nobody wants to hear this. Borges and Shaughnessy are good people.
Are good. Like, they treat you that same. I had the same experience. You know, when I first started doing this, they didn't treat me. They could have been fucking assholes.
Yeah.
But they're not. You know, I mean, some guys are, but they weren't like that.
When I was in college, my roommate and I made this, like, fantasy baseball publication that we sold in the classified ads in Baseball Weekly.
Yeah.
This is in, like, 1992.
Right.
And we sent it off to everyone under the sun, like, trying to get feedback or whatever. And Bob Costas wrote us, like, a little postcard.
Yeah.
And I don't know who else responded, but Shaughnessy called us in our dorm room and, like, took the time to call. I was a nobody, you know, and, like, gave us some thoughtful, like, criticism or whatever. And, you know, oh, maybe you should try advertising here or there. But he actually, like, gave it – he didn't have to do that.
Do you feel like you're old enough now and you've been around now that you can talk to younger guys about shit like that or not?
Yeah, definitely.
And do you?
Oh, yeah, all the time. I had – you know, there was a – there have been incidences in the past where a younger writer will call and say, hey, you know – manager, GM, somebody's pissed at what I wrote. How should I handle this? And I'm like, God, I remember having this conversation with Shaughnessy, and now like I'm the one giving out advice.
You do a lot.
I hate getting old.
Yeah.
It's all right. Here and there. It doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah. But it should. I think the younger guys should be more inquisitive. They should ask more questions.
Yeah, they suck.
Fucking these young guys suck. They're total assholes.
Yeah, we weren't assholes.
But I've never been an asshole. But you're one of these guys like within the writers, like you're in the accepted circle. Like, you're in that Twitter circle. Like, everybody likes you among the writers.
Yeah.
You're like,
I'm a nice guy.
A nice guy. I know, you're recognized as a nice guy.
Yeah.
But you're actually a nice guy. Like, there are nice guys who are assholes, but I actually think we don't know each other that well, but I think you're a nice guy.
I try. I mean, or I don't try. I just am who I am. Sometimes when I read all, like, the Twitter hatred, it's like, people don't actually know me at all, but.
Well, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
I know.
All right, I'll let you go. Get out of here.
All right.
Thanks, Sean. All right, thanks as always for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. If you want more podcasts like this with guests like Artie Lang, who else is going to have Artie Lang and fucking Bob Ryan on the same podcast, or David Portnoy and John Tomasi? If you want to listen to podcasts like this, you go to iTunes, Stitcher, you go to WEI.com, you go to the mobile app. When you go to iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. That's going to help us out a lot. If you want more of these, leave a rating, leave a review, and subscribe. Make sure you do that for me. That is a command. Now do it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.